Hey everyone, welcome to It's Alive. I'm Arundhati Venkaya, an editor with the Dayton Daily News. We're gonna talk about interactive machines that help build brand and awareness. So the way that this is gonna work is that our panelists are gonna speak for a few, we'll have a discussion among the panelists, and then we'll take questions. Feel free to tweet your questions to hashtag SXLiveBots, or please step up to the mic if you're gonna ask live. So here's our panel. FK Funderburk is Director of Mobile and Digital Experiences for Sapient Nitro. FK is based in Atlanta. Patrice Hall is the Social Marketing Director for Dayton-based Real Art Design Group, a digital creative agency. Justin Bayer is founder and CEO of Dayton-based Welcome to College, a startup that connects high school students to colleges and universities. And Nathan Martin is the CEO of Deep Local. Based in Pittsburgh, Deep Local is a mix of engineers, designers, and artists. I think FK is going to get us started.
So, everybody, what I wanted to talk to you guys about today, when we were setting this up, we were talking about the convergence of technology and a creative user experience, et cetera, et cetera. And what we wanted to do was show you guys how currently at Sapient Nitro, what we did was we merged vending with facial recognition, with social media to create a unique experience, right? We talked about some of the critical success factors, and if you can go to the next one, one of the biggest critical success factors we had on this project was we had the right client, right? And we got the right advocate within the client organization to kind of shield us and give us the ability to go out and build the experience and bring it to life kind of in a cocoon. So I thought what I'd do is just do a quick why we did it and then show a quick video, because I think we're trying to limit ourselves to about 3 or 4 minutes so we can do a lot of Q&A afterwards. So Walls or Unilever Ice Cream wanted to celebrate being in Portugal for 50 years. So they came to us and said, we'd really like to create some sort of experience that lets the people of Portugal know how much we appreciate the fact that we've been there and done such great business. And everybody really likes ice cream. So if you guys can figure out how to reinvigorate our vending experience and make it much more enjoyable and make it a very, you know, very happy experience, we'd love for you to come to us with ideas. So we came up with the concept of Share Happy. And it's really built around the fact that ice cream makes you smile. Doesn't matter whether you're 6 years old or 60 years old, when you get a popsicle or ice cream, you tend to smile because it's a very enjoyable experience. So why not start to share that, right? So we hooked it up to social media, and basically the whole premise was, if you're able to smile with our machine, the facial recognition notes that you have an 85% or bigger smile, you might get some free ice cream. So if we go to the video, we'll go ahead and play it, and then I'll kind of wrap up a little bit before I hand off. So what you're seeing now, yeah, go back. That's all right. Well, yeah, so the experience is much better than the video right now that we're watching. But yeah, it's not going. It's all right. Go ahead and click out and click on the thing. Yeah, all good, dude. Let's see if this works.
Most exciting thing ever. Whatever happened to that? Unilever thought it was time to recapture that special feeling for kids of all ages to share, but with a remarkable, never-seen-before 2010 twist. The journey started in the lab, with specialist teams developing a machine unlike any other. A vending machine that senses when people are near, uses groundbreaking facial recognition to tell your age, gender, and crucially, if you're smiling. Intricate technology captures and measures your smile 15 times a second, and if it's big enough, rewards you with your very own ice cream for free. With 3G technology built in, it even enables you to upload and share your picture on Facebook. The result? Not just a revolutionary point of purchase experience, but a revolutionary experience, period. An ice cream van for the digital age. A machine, sure, but one that captures, stimulates, shares, and spreads the most powerful and most human emotion of all. Share happy.
Cool. Can we go to the next slide? So what we ended up doing from an engineering standpoint is we had to figure out how do vending machines work, right? So we actually took one into our office and literally took it apart and figured out how does vending machine controlling software tell the machine itself to actually work. Then how do you integrate Flash onto a touchscreen to talk to the vending machine? Then how do you integrate Facebook? And then finally, how do you put the security software that actually originally was Israelis and then modified by a German firm, how do you take that and turn it into a marketing experience, right? So we ended up getting five disparate systems all integrated to enable Unilever to go out to Portugal to the Rock in Rio Festival and share happy. And what started out with four machines ended up being about 25 machines across seven or eight different countries, and we're even moving to the next evolution of this right now. So I guess that's really it for mine. You want to...
Great.
So I'll go next.
Yeah.
So I work at Real Art, a digital creative agency in Dayton, Ohio. And we work with all sorts of clients on anything from web design to print design. And I want to talk about a couple of projects. The first one is called the Santa Claw. We decided it would be fun one day to create just something enormous that everyone in the world could play at once. We built this arcade claw machine, and it's hard to tell just by itself, but that thing is 17 feet wide and 15 feet tall, and we wired it up using Arduino microcontrollers so that anyone over the internet could play it. We built an experience so that people could chat with each other while they were waiting to play, and they could watch other people's games. When they pulled something out of the bin, we actually mailed it to their home address. We gave them two monitors so that they could see both above and a front view where they were going. And I also have a video that tells the story pretty well.
What would it take to get the whole world to stop for a minute and play? It would have to be something huge, something awesome. Something anyone, anywhere could play. So we created the biggest claw game ever. We filled it with awesome prizes, and we invited the world to control it over the internet. And when players won, we shipped the prizes straight to their doors. We announced the game with giant tokens sent to a few friends. Those friends shared their games on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Soon, everyone wanted to play with us. We got over 200,000 hits in just 3 weeks. Thousands of players shared their games on Twitter. Blogs helped spread the word. Our line grew. We made a lot of new friends. Friends that appreciate fun, big ideas. And those are the people that make great clients.
We started that as a thank you to our clients and just sort of ended up as a hey, come play with us to everyone in the world. The second project I want to talk about is the Dip-A-Drip pitching machine that we built for Integer and 7-Eleven. they wanted to celebrate National Coffee Day by doing something a little different and letting everybody get into the game. So we built this, took a pitching machine and tweaked it so that you could play through Facebook. You'd sign in and you can control the angle and the speed of the ball and try to dunk one of these characters that you could watch live. And I think people liked that, just, you know, live interaction with the people in the machine. That's pretty much everything for me. Justin?
Yes, we created a website called welcometocollege.com. And Welcome to College helps high school students keep track and rate and plan all their college visits as they go through the search process and looking for colleges. And it allows universities and students to engage in some social media threads after their visits and stay connected. We launched late in the year of 2010 and had kind of a real traditional marketing plan that we planned to kick off in the spring, but I absolutely was not feeling it at all in terms of, you know, as I would meet with institutions that we work with, you know, when I would explain what we were planning on doing to market it, I just never felt like we were doing enough that we could really stand out and make a big impact. So I met with our creative agency in Dayton, which is actually Real Art Design Group, and we had a brainstorm about a year ago, around this time last year. And what came out of that brainstorm was a whole idea around a mobile vehicle that we named MARV, which stands for the Mobile Automated Research Vehicle. Kind of ties into what we're about, which is helping high school kids research colleges. We wanted something that we could take on the road to high schools, to colleges, actually collecting our own research for the website in regards to helping them actually see what the students of these campuses think of that school. MARV is a 26-foot 1973 GMC RV that the agency helped me totally retrofit and turn into an interactive machine that is actually self-aware. And we can go to a campus and turn MARV on, and MARV will call people to it through talking and engaging and go into a whole research collection. And one of the things the owner of Real Art said to me during the project was, this will leave everybody smiling. And MARV leaves absolutely everybody smiling. At the end of his questions, he gives away a prize. You could reach into his license plate. He blows confetti. He is a complete spectacle in terms of being able to tell our story and what Welcome to College is all about. And I actually have a couple minute video, which will show you kind of how this thing came about.
Welcome to College came to us, and we did a whole website campaign for them where we took Justin's idea and turned it into something where someone could go online and kind of get an idea of what they were looking for in going to college.
You know, we got a team together and he said, you know, the site's launched, but, you know, how do we tell the world? The more we thought, you know, we need to get out and actually get in front of the schools, you know, the potential users of the site and things like that, and bring them an experience like they've never seen before.
What we ultimately came up with was an RV, which I wasn't thinking an RV from the 70s, but I was thinking, okay, cool, an RV.
Something that grabbed their attention. And then once we had them, then we could tell them the Welcome to College story. MARV kind of came out of that.
What's up? I'm Brian. We're taking a road trip to pick up an RV for Welcome to College.
We sat down, we had several brainstorms going back and forth about, you know, does this thing drive around? Is it like a carnival game? Shooting confetti at people? Do they get to like play games? You know, what is it that makes it so attractive?
Well, does RV have to mean recreational vehicle?
No.
I mean, it could mean research vehicle. And research, at the end of the day, is exactly what Welcome to College is about. It's about doing research and then sharing that information and knowledge with, you know, young high school kids that are getting ready to go to college all over the country.
You know, we had a lot of different things kind of thrown around. A big interactive screen, kind of like a monitor, where people that walk up, people from a distance, can see something going on screen.
We had to design the personality, you know, it wasn't going to be there if we didn't think about it.
May I suggest getting a shake weight?
Does he ask a question.
Tell me your thoughts on class sizes.
And then respond with answer A, answer B, answer C.
All the air cannons, those are all almost their own project unto themselves. The airbags that allow them to go up and down and, you know, move and respond to user interaction. Completely different system. And then all of that has to run quietly and autonomously while people are interacting with them. That's what I love about projects like this. They serve as a great rallying opportunity for all 50-some people to kind of get together and lend a hand.
You got to interact with it by talking and communicating. You got to make yourself into an interviewee and make the RV into an interviewer and get like a whole experience interacting with colleges and universities.
It's kind of like all of our projects, these kind of odd constructions, more interactive, experiential. They're hard. Once they're done and you can step back and look at what you've created, then you kind of start to forget about some of the long hours.
So it was really cool seeing his personality shine through, and it seemed like the people were really engaged by what he was saying and what he was doing.
Hey, you come here often? Just kidding. I am Marv. Nice to meet you.
Marv is a really amazing example of what we can do and how we do it.
Marv's been an absolute key for us at Welcome to College in regards to getting our brand out, spreading the word, whether it's with, you know, the largest institutions. We've traveled the country with Marv, and it's you know, turning into something to help get us on the radar screen for our potential clients, which are universities. But also, you know, it doesn't even matter when we take it to high schools, or, you know, we could stop at a gas station. I was at a Shell gas station and it turned into a 2-hour stop because people kept coming over wanting to engage and see what this thing was all about. And you know, wherever we go, it's given us a great opportunity to tell our story. One of the other things is, you know, Marv has a whole website that you could actually go through. He has a tracker. You can kind of see where he's going, the stops where we're making. We share pictures and videos here of our stops that Marv takes. And then finally, you know, we've created him to be a completely social interactive machine. So he's on all the social networks, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Foursquare, Scavenger. And we're connecting and engaging with these communities of people after we leave constantly. And so we're building a really good energy around Marv. And what's amazing is, you know, we created some buttons and that just say, I heart Marv. And when anybody leaves after the chance to kind of engage with Marv, there is a connection that's made, and they really leave with a positive experience and understanding of what we're all about at Welcome to College. So that's Marv.
Hi, my name is Nathan from Deep Local. I have no videos, so that might be good. So Deep Local is a company. We're based in Pittsburgh, but we're really a weird mix of artists, engineers, designers. I ran an art group for about 10 years, and we're the spillover of that. We started to work in advertising a few years ago, and are most known, you can flip the slide. We're most known for a project called Chalkbot. Chalkbot was a machine that we built about 2.5 years ago, a fully pneumatic robot that was built for the Tour de France and for Livestrong Foundation. Nike was the client. And we did that in collaboration with Wieden and Kennedy Portland. What the machine allowed were people to be able to send messages and tweets directly to the roads of the Tour de France, piggybacking on the history that the Tour really has of chalking the streets. People's messages were tied to cancer survival or cancer awareness or RIP messages. That's cool. It's fine. And the message would print directly on the road, sort of like an old dot matrix printer, 48 spray nozzles, pneumatic robot. A camera system would snap a picture of the printed message, grab the GPS coordinates of where it was printed at. You can leave that one up. That's fine. And then that would send it back to a user so they get a little document. The thing, it was a little bit subversive, so it appeared on all of the televised newscasts and anything that was covering the tour, because the first year all they talked about was snails and the Chalkbot. So it was a really cool way of getting press for not a lot of money. Which is really sort of my background. Now you can go to the next project. So showing you that, I'm going to show you really quickly some of these projects. But we make this all with a very small team. Chalkbot was done in 7 weeks. 5 weeks of build, 2 weeks to ship, and then we operated the whole time the Tour de France with a team of about 5 people. This project was done over a weekend. It was a really simple project we did with Saatchi & Saatchi LA. As I said, we collaborate a lot with agencies. Wanted to produce a game for the holidays last year, a year ago, that people could play beer pong online. Really simple. So you would log into a website, sit in line, wait for your turn, and be able to control the pan, tilt, and zoom, and sort of shoot a ping pong ball into a cup. If it went into the cup, someone from Saatchi & Saatchi drank. I don't know if anyone's here from Saatchi & Saatchi, but they drank 52 gallons of alcohol in 3 days. And everyone that was there loves us now. They're friends after that much fun. But so same idea, people sat in line and watched. And with a project like this, a lot of our projects, there's such a short amount of time and a short number of people that can engage directly. So one thing we think about a lot is the viewing experience, the I just want to watch. A project like this had 1,000 Facebook likes in the first day with no press behind it. It wasn't sort of designed to get press necessarily. But it did great because people could watch, and it was funny, and there were humans involved, not just machines. Next slide. Another project, we did a lot of partnerships with Toyota and Saatchi last year to end the year out. And I'm just showing this because it's an example of what we like to do that I think I challenge everyone to do because it's a lot of fun for us, is we took on a project that in a technology we've never worked in before. So Toyota was trusting enough to give us a Prius that we dismantled in 2 days. And basically figured out how the car worked. None of us had worked in automotive engineering before, and built a roller coaster out of that Prius. So we designed and welded a 70-foot coaster track. We dropped into a warehouse in Pittsburgh that was bolted into the ground. We designed a custom coaster car, dropped the engine and all the wiring system into the coaster car, convinced that car that it was in fact a Prius, because it's basically a computer, dropped that car and would apply the brakes remotely and pull power off the regenerative braking system as part of the Ideas for Good campaign that Saatchi had come up with to show how you can reuse Toyota technology in other contexts. One more. A project that was just a panel an hour ago is the Prius concept bike. This is another very simple project technically, but is a good one-liner, a good story for people, and is about sort of the design principles of the Prius. Partnering with Saatchi & Saatchi again, Parley, which is a high-end road bike manufacturer from Boston. Bob Parley's here for South By. Parley designed a custom bike built on some of the design principles of the Prius. This bike then we retrofitted back with an electronic shifting system and EEG headset. This allows our engineer who just demoed it to be able to shift this bike. I don't know if he's back there, Patrick. Nope. It was a success, right, Heather? He did it? Okay, good. Thumbs up. So in front of a pretty big audience, he was able to shift the bike by thinking up or down. So that's sort of a crazy future technology to get people to think. Next slide. And this is a fun project. We do a lot of fun stuff when we have time. This is a project called the Like Belt. This was built in 2 days. Prius bike was 2 weeks. This project was basically an experiment with near field communication. We extended the antenna on an NFC phone. Built this sort of like WWF champion style belt, and then used RFID chips and published all this as open source code so that you could basically like things in the real world the way we used to like things by humping them. So we wanted to bring this back to the real world. A thrust is something, a double thrust I think is like a check-in. But if you go to likebelt.com, you'll see that. And that's Patrick, who just did the mind-shifting bike. His wife gave us permission to use this video. But thanks.
Great. So when we were talking about this panel, we came up with just some questions, some things that we were interested in. And so I'm going to ask a few questions of the panelists, and then we will take your questions. So one of the first questions that came to mind is, how do you balance the risk versus the cost? And when do you know when to flip the switch? How do you build that trust?
This is my question. We planned this one. So everything that we do is highly risky. I just told you we dismembered a car in 2 days. We've never touched a Prius before. I think that risk is something where when we go into a project, there's a couple things. You want to have a client and a partnership with an agency. We try to develop really deep relationships with people at agencies so that we trust them, they trust us. But you focus on what the end goal is, the experience someone's going to have, and then how you get there, what nozzle you use, what pneumatics you choose, whatever you use as your microcontroller, doesn't really matter as long as you get to the experience. So building that trust is really important first, and having a client who is willing to take a little bit of a risk. But the way you mitigate risk, which is also really important for us, is we do a lot of things. We pay attention to news cycles and trends. We develop a pretty strong relationship with a lot of journalists. We seed some of our work. We all see, you know, you can use this really simple judge. You guys all, if you're all creatives, you work in the industry and you know that, you know, it's really simple to look at an idea and know if it's dumb or not and know if it's cool or not. And I use this litmus test of my father. I was just telling these guys, if my dad can understand a project we're working on, it's probably a good idea. And if he cannot, it's probably going to be a failure. And so if you can really look at things with this honesty and this sincerity about, you know, is it really going to work, then it usually will. But you need to bring your clients along for that ride and be really careful about managing. I need to stop talking.
No, you're fine. How do you measure ROI or attain ROI?
Yeah, so this one's mine. Can you all hear me? So what we were talking about earlier is we honestly all met for the first time this morning, right, over breakfast, and we talked a lot about this via email. But as we were sitting down at breakfast and we were kind of comparing the notes around our projects and the different ways we approached it, it was pretty interesting because a couple of things came to the forefront, right? And mostly it's passion. It's the passion that we bring and our teams bring to projects like this. And what comes with that and the high risk that Nathan was talking about is the ability to be incredibly collaborative with your clients and transparent, so that from day one, especially with our ShareHappy, we sat down with them and said, look, there's some risk here because we're going to be doing this at a concert to pull it off for the first time. We think we can do a lot of the following goals, like X amount of ice cream sold, get this amount of impressions on Facebook, and then follow-up shares and everything. But what is it you're really trying to do? So it's much more of a collaborative discussion at the beginning of projects like this with the clients to say, look, we think we can pull this off. Here's why. Here's the rationale and the math behind it. But let's verify what y'all are trying to do and make sure we're on the same page, and then we'll drive towards that goal. So it was just interesting across all of these projects. It was collaboration, transparency, and then the passion that we were able to bring to the actual engagement and get the client to match that passion with us. So that all kind of helped us determine what's the ROI and what are we trying to do, and then how do we get towards that goal. So,
Patrice, what parts of your projects were most successful?
For us, especially with the Santa Claus, we had several different elements that all combined to make it sort of addictive. One was that chat experience where people could customize their own little characters and make them their own, you know, give them little hats to wear and chat with, you know, strangers or with each other if they got in line at the same time. They also had a goal in picking up the right prize and all sorts of, it was that what Nathan said, where if it's something that is hilarious, if people want to talk about, you know, old Dokken records and Brut Cologne were some of the prizes. And so things like that were just sort of hilarious and outlandish. And then also that people had the ability to tweet, I mastered the claw and I bet you can't do the same. So the fact that they could talk about themselves in connection to this machine and not just, hey, check out this machine I found. It was, here's what I did. I think that helped it spread, and we got 20,000 visitors on our first day of launch with no, you know, we seeded a little bit with our clients and friends, but other than that, it was just all that one day. So things like that, then that, you know, that physical experience that's unique, it gives people a seed online to spread it.
Okay, so I'm not a creative. So one of my favorite things to ask is, where in the hell do you guys come up with these ideas? And I think Justin's gonna help us with this one.
Yeah. So the owner of Real Art, Chris Wire, who's here, when we were building the website, as a joke to me in passing one day, asked me if I ever needed a bread truck for anything. And it was one of these kind of ideas that when he said it to me, I think he was in passing really kind of joking around, but it was something that in my mind I kept thinking about it for months, about having something mobile that we could take to schools. And so, you know, 6 months later or so, this idea is literally still running in my head, and I went back to him and I said, you know, is this bread truck idea something that I could seriously talk to you about? I really think there's something around this mobile. I'm really interested in this bread truck. And he said, he goes, if you're really interested in something mobile, I don't know if a bread truck is going to be, if you're going to want to drive this thing around the country, you probably want something a little more comfortable than a bread truck. And so he said, let's have a brainstorming meeting in terms of what you're thinking. And we went around the table for about an hour talking about what we were hoping to get out of this. And somebody at the meeting said, you know, we really need something that's going to get people's attention. It needs to be like an Optimus Prime type of vehicle to get people to pay attention. And that this was 2 days before South by last year. I got on a plane, had a meeting in San Antonio. I was driving to Austin, and I got a call back from Chris Wire, and he said, I think I got it. And we'll have to ask him exactly how he came up with the whole concept, but he said to me this whole concept about, you know, what do you think of when you think of RV? And I said, recreational vehicle. He said, no, what about your company? Think about what you do, research vehicle. And, you know, kind of went through the concept with me over the phone. We hung up, and I literally passed, no joke, on 35 from San Antonio to Austin. There are about 20 RV dealerships on each side of the road all the way into Austin. And everything just was sitting on me as I'm driving, like, that's it. We got to do this. And a couple days later, I'm at South By, and he called back. And he said, I found one up in Port Clinton, Ohio. Do you want to do it? We have to get it. Like, if we want this done by when you want it done, we have to get it, like, right now. And so it was one of these kind of things where we pulled the trigger on it, and these guys did an unbelievable job putting Marv together. And that's a little bit of background on the story.
What I think works especially well about Marv is that having this RV that collects information and interacts with the places he goes is that it becomes almost one of the students, like one of the students that uses Welcome to College. So it sort of is the perfect example of your product.
So we're doing really well on time. I want to ask the panel one last question, which is, if I'm in the audience, how can I do this? How can I make this happen for my company?
I think the first thing, and something that FK pointed out, is having a client that really trusts you and is willing to take that large risk with you. And you know, it is risky, but when you can captivate people's attention and really make an impression with the very things that you're trying to get across about yourself, like with Welcome to College, it's, you know, how you really got to experience a college. And with us, it was that we do make these experiences and that we're a fun company. I think that it's really invaluable. So having that trust between, if you're a client, having that trust with your agency, or if you're an agency, having the trust with your client.
Anybody else want to weigh in?
Yeah, I mean, Nathan said this earlier as well, is whenever we have spare time in between projects, we tinker with stuff. So the Atlanta office right now is full of machines that are in various states of dismemberment, because when people have time off or spare time or whatever, we start taking stuff apart to see how it works. And we kind of encourage that. And people go build something and then come back and say, hey, I built this experience that involves a falling touchscreen, and it can send a message or cause this catapult to launch something or something. And then we sit there and say, all right, that's pretty cool. Now, is there a business use for this? Are there any clients we already have that we could take this to and say, hey, look what we built? So there's a little bit of that kind of mad scientist approach as well, of when you're sitting around and just architect something out on a whiteboard. And very fortunately, our company encourages that. And from the conversations that we had this morning, it seems like these guys encourage it as well. Because, you know, if you can build something, you can sell something, in all honesty. You just got to find the right client.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I love what I get to do right now. Like I said, I ran an art group for a long time, and I'm self-taught in all my technical skills. I come from an art background. And, you know, the team I have are people that I wholeheartedly trust. And I hire for people that are, you know, that I want to spend time with, but that are deep learners. All they want to do is learn. Our engineer who I talked about, Patrick, came to me as a software engineer. Now he's one of our top electrical engineers. We invest in people. We bring a roboticist in to train our employees. All I care about is those people, and whatever they're willing to do or their interests are, we change the company based around those interests. Because we're 10 people, we can do that. A lot of agencies we work with, trying to figure out how to do that model, I think it's hard. I think it's hard because you have a method of making money. We don't, and I'm the one sole member of our board of directors, and I don't care. I just want to do great stuff. And as long as we have that, and I have employees who trust me that I can keep bringing in money, and I sort of share the wealth with them, then we can do kind of anything we want. So if we want to make a belt so you can hump something, and we have a few days, we can. There's no one to convince to let us do that or wonder if it, like, dilutes our brand. We just do it.
Justin?
Just going to add that when we started this project, the owner said to me, you know, I fell in love with the idea that it was an old RV, a 1973, and I had a lot of advisors that were suggesting to me not to go in that direction, to get a new RV. And the thing about Marv that's so unique is that it is a 1973. It's a classic RV. And when we talked about this, I kind of knew going in, you know, there's going to be some work that we need to do to get this thing back to roadworthy and, you know, can travel the country. And not only with all the technology that's in Marv, but, you know, even just the process itself of getting this to this point. I know for us, it's been the journey of getting this thing to this point that has been one of the most rewarding things I think I've ever been through.
Cool. Okay, so we have our first question. If y'all want to, if you want to tweet questions, I'm happy to take them up here. It's hashtag SXLiveBots. The first question is for Justin. What data from Marv is shared with the client college, and what's their benefit?
So currently, right now, we're collecting all the data. Marv goes through, basically just like the website, he'll go through four kind of rounds of questions that talk about, so when we're on a campus, it'll ask students about the facilities, it'll ask them about the academics, it'll ask them about the campus life, social life. It'll ask about three or four questions, and then it'll ask them to record a video if they want, to take a photo, and then they get a prize. And currently, right now, we're collecting all of that, and we are not. It's currently not something that we are publishing live online. We would share it with an institution that we're working with in terms of what we're collecting from the students. We are kind of a next phase of Welcome to College. We'll be actually on the school profiles pages that Marv has visited. This data would be accessible for anybody to see in regards to, you know, as we're there collecting it. And that's currently not built into the site at this point, but that's the direction that we're moving in terms of sharing this data that we're collecting much more publicly. Right now, we've kind of, again, it's only been since last fall that he's really been on the roads, but we're looking a lot into this research that we could be utilizing it and how we're utilizing it, and it's a great way to engage students all over.
Good. Any other questions? You can feel free to step up to the mic also.
You don't need to tweet. You can just ask.
Yeah, you can just ask. It's true. But you have to go to the microphone. Anybody? Oh,
yeah,
come on. Work with me.
I'm just going to speak really loud.
Good.
Any tips on making engineers creative?
I think, I just sort of dove into that. I think that, like, for me, I think I have a lot of practice in that. I think everyone's creative. I don't think you have to make engineers creative. I think what I focus on more than anything else with my company is creating a culture where we have an artist residency program. We donate money even when we don't make that much to arts programs in our city. It's very visible that we support arts, and we bring artists in, we hire them as freelance creatives to work on projects with us so that we don't get stale ideas and keep regurgitating our own ideas. So just seeing that as an engineer, the engineers start to pick up design skills. We have them, everyone works very closely in our company, so I found that it's a lot faster if I can have engineers learn basic design principles than to have them go through a process of design review. So everyone has a really strong sense of aesthetic. And I really just think that it's that culture that really changes people. If you see that going on and everyone in there is really embracing it, when I can get engineers to go see experimental theater in our town, which I do, that's pretty crazy. I mean, they might sort of laugh at the nudity, but it's pretty impressive. I think it's that. You need to create a culture that supports that. If you have a culture, people that like that culture will be attracted to you. That's how I get new engineers that are attracted to our company. It's building that.
Yeah, I think that's fair, man. And on top of that, you know, with us, we have engineers and creatives. We all sit at the same table. So there's no, you know, we don't divide the room into engineers going in one spot, technologists in another, and creatives in another, and everybody doing their own thing and then coming together. We all sit at big tables. There are toys everywhere. And literally, we'll say something like, go do shit. Go build something. Go have fun. Go see what that table over there is doing and get involved. Ask questions. I mean, it's a very open it's a very open atmosphere. And then we foster that and encourage it. And literally, go tell them, go build something. You know, take this month and hang out with this dude and see what he does and see if you can make an improvement on it. So it's very much kind of ingrained in our culture as well.
And if my engineers have an idea that maybe is like for a product or something, because we build our own products too, I sort of have this
this rule where it's like, you know, if you can do something in 2 weeks, let, you know, take your big grand idea and cut it down into something you can accomplish in 2 weeks. If you can build something in 2 weeks and show it to me or show it to everyone else, then we'll do it. If you can't simplify your idea down to something that's executable in 2 weeks, then we're probably never going to find time to work on it because we're just too small. So that's where things like the like belt come out of.
Okay, so I've got another question and then I'll take yours. Is that cool? Sorry.
Oh man, Twitter wins.
And actually, when you hear this question, you'll laugh even more. So do you feel that real world experiences make a deeper emotional connection than digital experiences? Sorry.
Who are we asking?
Anybody. It's for all of you.
I think that the real world experience, just it sort of adds a new texture to a digital experience, because most of the people that touch these projects are on the internet. You know, you have a certain audience for the physical world. You know, there are 100 of us in this room, but you know, any number of people could be listening online. So, but it's something that feels different from just a regular website. If you feel like you're interacting with this machine, or if you're watching someone interact with a machine that you've never seen before, I think that it's the balance of the two.
I mean, for me, I'm old, and I get bored online really, really quickly. And I feel like I've been through enough that I think that physical stuff is interesting. I'm recreating art projects. If you guys are really interested in this work, you should check out a lot of mid and late 90s work that was being done in electronic media, because that's pretty much what I do for a living, is remake art projects from the mid 90s. but I mean, I feel like now it's amazing because we have the bandwidth and we have audience and we have all this other stuff that we never had before, and brand logos that help. But I think what's really amazing is when you can break through the noise and clutter online, you can put another Facebook app out, and you're going to have a really big challenge to be amazing, to get people to talk about what you're doing, because you have to stand out exceptionally. It doesn't mean you can't do it. It just means you have to work harder. If I build a pitching machine or a machine that prints on the road or an RV, you're sort of separating yourself a little bit from the bunch, which gives you that little bit of spectacle that maybe you can insert yourself into a conversation. You're different. You're interesting enough. But then you still have the same challenge as anything else, any other piece of advertising, where if you're not delivering a cool experience or good content or something that's interesting or of value, it's a waste of time. And you never want to create a waste of time, whether it's a physical machine or it's a website. So you, in the end of the day, you have the same challenge of engaging people. It just gives you sort of a leg up at the initial stage. So it's not that one matters more than the other, although a lot of my engineers have deleted their Facebook accounts. So I think there's a trend, but yeah.
Last year I was at a session, and one of the highlights was somebody mentioned the fact that when people can reach out and touch and engage with your brand, the likelihood to remember and think of you goes way up. And I remember when Chris was telling me the fact that, you know, people are going to be able to touch buttons on Marv to engage with it. To me, you know, I love that idea, and it's fun to watch actually when people engage with Marv because of his self-awareness, and they'll push a button and he'll respond based off of what button they push. And so, you know, it creates this relationship almost to watching this interactive vehicle engage humans, and the smiles and the laughter, and you know, there's something that's incredibly unique about it.
But I just want to say, don't be disillusioned, because we work with lots of ad agencies and lots of people come to us to work with us, and I think like there is a little bit of a trend going on right now to say, if I make something physical, people will talk about it. And I don't think that's the case at all. I think just making another object in the real world does not mean that people are going to talk about it. And you'll put a lot of time and a lot of risk into making something physical. Focus on the idea and make sure it's actually a cool experience. And if it involves a physical component, fantastic. But if it doesn't, there's no reason to push making another thing that prints on the road or vends products, because it you're really going to engage with a lot smaller number of people initially, which means you have to sort of target that second tier audience that people are going to talk about what you're doing. And that's a hard thing to bet on. You really have to sort of build towards it, engineer for it.
Okay, your question, please.
Yes, actually I'm highly envious of the client that you seem to fund. So one question that I have is what is this return on investment metrics that they will be satisfactory to these clients in terms of, is it 1,000 likes in Facebook sufficient, 10,000? Who
That's a good question.
Who marks that? Is there an accountability on your case to deliver those success stories after investment?
I hate those questions. I'm looking at
that. Yeah, I mean, so it all depends. Like on ours, you know, we chose Portugal, smaller market, right? So basically the key performance, right? The what we wanted to do was based on, all right, how many people live in Portugal? What are the size? How many people go to the Rock in Rio Festival, right? And we're going to have three machines, and X amount of ice cream is going to flow through there. So how, what percentage of the attendees do we want to touch? And that's all based on amount of ice cream that's sold and the number of people that choose to post to Facebook. And then the metrics you can take on that is how long did they stand in front of the machine? What ice cream did they actually buy? You know, what time of day were they buying the different ice cream? So if you're Unilever or somebody else on a client side, you get this wealth of data. So it's not just who likes you, but when, what time, how long they engage with you. So it's not just the number of people who touch, but it's also details around how they did it. We were talking about this morning. So not to go back to what you're saying, because you're right, man. If there doesn't need to be a physical aspect to this, don't do it, right? It's all about the experience itself. But if you are building a physical kind of an engaging experience that involves touch, et cetera, the data you can get from a touch screen is fantastic. The types of people who are in front, what they're doing, what they're buying, the time of day they're doing all that. And all of this data goes into a dashboard that then goes back to the client, and the client can say, damn, I need to have more of this product out there at this time of day versus that time of day, or this machine that I have in location A, it's only selling one product and it's only selling it to one type of people. So I'm gonna reconfigure my product mix. So I start to sell better to my end users, as opposed to just having a whole bunch of stuff out there and hoping people buy it. So it just depends, right?
We do a lot of measurement as well. I mean, of all of our, anyone that talks about a project that we're working on or, you know, some standard metrics, I just don't deal with any of that shit. That's why I was sort of.
Okay, let me get this one back here, and then we'll come to you. Go ahead.
In terms of going through some of these projects, I imagine there's things that have gone wrong along the way. Has there anything that you guys have done, that there's been some problems you worked through and they turned out to be tremendous insights, and that potentially could be advice for any of us wanting to pursue this avenue?
Yeah, I mean, I think every project has a sort of ripple path, and I think that's where the trust comes in, is if you have that end goal. I mean, we just wrapped up a project with Martin Agency for BFG, and it was great because the client had a lot of trust for us. It was a creative that we worked with at Wieden & Kennedy before on Chalkbot. So, I mean, we came into it. We knew what the end game was. We knew there was a fixed amount of money, and we knew we had to sort of solve the problem in like a very short amount of time. And so I think once you have that trust set up, there's no ability to fail. That's the difference between like an art project and what we do right now. We can't fail. There's a date, and then sometimes there's a film crew, and there's a lot of more people that paid a lot more money than us. So we have to make our shit work. And one thing that you do to sort of build towards that is you slowly build a sort of arsenal of skills. I think every project we do, we learn. And we learn more technology, more skills. And we focus on this thing called gutter tech, which is a term, the old hacker term that I use a lot. Just means use the lowest common denominator technology to solve a problem. If you can solve a problem by, you know, with duct tape and a rubber band, do it. Do not use something more complex. If you can use a human in a time when you would rather automate with some sophisticated piece of software, some library, but you can't get that to work, use a human. Because most of these things have a short lifespan. So we are big fans of finding whatever solution necessary to get to the end, and having clients that trust us that we're gonna get to that end. There's no, you know, ability to fail, but I think where you learn is really that to think simply. Think as simple as possible. It's why I still have artists think about technology problems, because they can usually come up with solutions that, I mean, I still am amazed that I am able to interject into a technology problem at my company and actually have feedback that my engineers can go, wow, that's really smart. And it's not that I'm smart, I'm not like them. I'm not trained in some area of expertise. I'm just trying to think about something in a logical way. And sometimes when you become an expert, you forget that there are all kinds of other ways of solving a problem.
Yeah, and I would say write stuff down. We were talking about this earlier. Yeah. You'll be standing in front of a machine, and you've done all the coding and everything, whatever it is, and it doesn't work, and then you're starting to lose sleep, you're tired, you're aggravated, everybody's been up for 3 or 4 days, and all of a sudden you do something and it works, and somebody goes, what'd you do? And you're like, I have no idea what I just did. So we were talking about this. Clients more and more want to know what went into all of this, right? Like, how did you get this machine to work? What happened? And we've had a lot of times where we're like, oh, man, we're going to have to remember 8 weeks of work and write everything down that actually worked. And so writing it down, living on a whiteboard, we're very much a whiteboard culture. So constantly writing it down and then saying it didn't work because of this, all of that helps, because you use that on the next one. That, and I'll tell you this, an iPod Touch when you put it in a freezer for 24 hours, does not work.
So imagine that. Okay, so we've got your question.
Yep.
Go ahead.
One thing I noticed that all these projects really had in common was a sense of play. And I was curious what all your thoughts were on how easy it is to create a sense of empathy with a machine. Is it easy to make a machine seem nice? Is that important to this kind of work?
It's funny, I get a lot of people when they don't or know what Marv is, like I'll hear, like I'll get a, some people walk by and they're like, man, this thing's creepy. And they have no idea what it's about to do. And then once it talks and engages and does its thing, you know, they get it. But, you know, and I think because of how fun we made this thing in terms of the music it plays, the games it plays, the confetti it shoots, it kind of leaves them thinking, okay, you know, and they get what we're doing too with the research once we have the time to explain what Welcome to College is. So I think that's a key question in terms of adding that sense of play and fun. And I know, you know, when we were thinking about Marv, what got me excited was that, you know, when I kept thinking about a talking RV, I just kept thinking like the litmus test. I'm like, that would be awesome. You know, and yeah, some people have a perception of RVs that could be creepy, but once you spend time and engage, it's pretty fun.
With Marv in particular, we did a lot of effects on the voice so that it wasn't, we wanted it to sound sort of like what you'd imagine, like almost like a howl, but also we wanted him to have, to feel like he had a personality that was kind of playful, so we added a lot of little like dings and chimes so that it sounds like a friendly, not scary voice.
Not creepy.
Yeah.
Okay, so last question, and then we'll be around, and you can ask, come up afterwards. Go ahead, please.
Just wondered how your internal teams feel when you're imitated or knocked off. Just like having seen facial recognition vending machine by Coca-Cola, does your internal team go, hey, imitation is the sincere form of flattery, or does it raise the bar and kind of really become a throwdown then?
It's a really loaded question. yes. So, no, it's... It's like, oh, hey, look, that's great. So there's certain flattery, and then there's, all right, let's go do something else. Let's top it.
Yeah.
Let's go do something else. I mean, it's invigorating.
Exactly.
Yeah. We were talking about this earlier. All four of us get out of bed every day fired up to go in and go do something cool, right? And so seeing what these guys did with Marv, I'm like, damn, I kind of wish we'd come up with that idea. And even, I mean, yeah, all this stuff. So it's exciting, right? It's flattery, but it's also a challenge, so...
It depends on what you want to do. Like for like Chalkbot, you know, we decided right after we did that project that we were not going to become the Chalkbot company. And like sadly, for a few projects, we were the company that prints messages on shit, and we did a few of those because we had to like pay bills. But we got sort of past that. But you really have to say, you know, is that what you want to do? If we wanted to be a product company, we could have. Instead, we spun off the IP to another company, and it has yet to figure out how to make the machine commercializable, but well, that's okay. But there is something you got to deal with there. And if you want to sit and do one thing over and over again, I would lose all my engineering staff because they came to me because they left companies that do exactly that. So you have to be this company of reinvention. And that's what's great about advertising is it's very different than being a product company. And when I talk to ad agencies that want to be more like a product company, I tell them that's how I started and it was not fun. Like there's a lot of not fun stuff when you're a product company. So I mean, I think that, you know, competition is good. I think what's interesting is you're seeing here a lot of companies that are doing some similar physical world stuff. I think a genre is kind of emerging right now. And what's interesting about that is when you talk about ROI and trust and all this stuff, is the more of these projects that can be successful, that you guys can do as well, that people can look at, well, yeah, I'll be competitive with you and I'll watch what you're doing and I'll try to follow you pretty closely. But I still think it's great because it pushes other clients to go, well, hey, you know, I like that thing that was done for 7-Eleven and can we do something like that? I mean, we all need a genre of other stuff that's successful that we can support each other and then you can really grow, I think.
I think if we're doing our jobs right, then the brand is so imprinted in the technology that we're using that even if you use the same technology for a different project, it wouldn't be the same. Like with Marv, you know, the fact that it's all about a college visit and Marv is visiting colleges. With the Santa Claus, it was all about, you know, creating something that was really unique and that people could play with and grab things online. So I think that, you know, it doesn't bother me if someone else uses it, it'll be a completely different project anyway.
And I hope others create interactive 1973 RVs because There's only about 15,000 of them that were made from 73 to 78. Only 11,000 still are on the roads. But we could form an RV club because these owners of these old RVs absolutely love them. And I can share stories of blown gaskets, changing fuel filters, and an airbag that we blew on the way here. I mean, there's just all, whoever asked the challenge question, I mean, there's I don't think of one trip we've left the state of Ohio where something has not happened that we've had to address and face. But to be honest, it's made for some amazing people we've met along the way to help us, and just some great experiences in terms of, you know, doing something different.
Sorry, Justin. So one last thing. If you'd like to meet Marv, you can come to the Beale Street Tavern between 7 and 10 tonight. Marv's out front. And come party with Sapient Nitro on Sunday night at Royal Austin between 8 and 10. You're all invited.
And is it true that Marv is actually outside?
Yeah, Marv's,
right now?
Marv's parked right out front. We got there at 7 a.m., so we're right on 6th Street. So we're going to have him on display and in full force. So we'd love to have you there.
We don't have a deep local party, but if you want to meet, just say hi.
Thank you all.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.